Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strantz here. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks Talk brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. Shop in store or online at thehockeyshop.com. A reminder, it is Food Bank Friday here at the station, as well as our sister stations, Jack, 1130, Sonic. We're all teaming up to support the Greater Vancouver Food Banks. You can text a carrot emoji to 30333. That's how you donate. Then you can choose your choice of a $5, $10, or $25 donation. You can also find an online donation link at our website if you want to support the food banks that way as well. Shout out to a couple of big donors here. Morgan and Alexa Brewster donated $1,000. That's incredible. Rick from Medallion Homes, he's matched Standard Buildings $500, and he continues to challenge all builders to meet or beat that $500 matching. So if you're a contractor out there, Rick from Medallion Homes has laid down the gauntlet for you. He wants to challenge you with that $500 donation. We're up over $30,000 as of 12:30. We're keeping it going all day. Now is the time. It's 6 a.m. It started going to 6 p.m. So you can donate. 30333 is the number. Text the carrot emoji to support the Greater Vancouver Food Banks. All right. 650, 650, as I mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send in your thoughts about last night's game. We can get back into that. But some stuff to update in the rumor mill in Canucks land today. And we had heard this. The Vincent Desharnais name out there, courtesy of Rick Dhaliwal. I think Satyar Shah on our station has also reported it. Now Elliot Friedman weighing in, saying in print and in 32 Thoughts, I believe, the podcast, that the Canucks are trying to find a different situation for Desharnais. It just hasn't worked out. I think we can all see that, right? Mark Friedman's drawing into the lineup ahead of him. You know, his minutes are way down. It was always pitched as a project, but I think we also know what this management group does with projects that aren't working out. They move on. They move on when it's clear that it's not working out. So that's a situation to keep an eye on. Friedman also says just about the Canucks' plans in general that he's getting, as he says, mixed messages, that hearing, you know, hey, we've got Demko and Miller back. That's great. Let's see how the team performs now so we can really kind of identify what our needs are. But he also says, look, this is Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin. We know how aggressive they like to be. They're making calls. Maybe they want to move a couple of bodies out, and they're looking for a defenseman and a forward. So I don't think I think that actually makes a lot of sense, as much as it might be mixed messaging, right? That this management group doesn't feel like they're desperate to go out and do something because they do finally have something close to the full complement of their roster back and on the ice together. So there's no immense pressure. They're happy to see how the team gels, how they look. Having said that, there's also some clear-cut needs that we knew about already. And if the situation presents itself, we know they're not going to be scared to pull the trigger and go out and get something done.
Yeah. I think they've been in something of a holding pattern, not for a lack of activity or a lack of trying, but for a lack of certainty about exactly what this team is, right? And for a lack of options at an affordable clip, at a clip that they would realistically pay, right? So I think that's sort of where we're at here. You know, I heard Friedman on the 32 Thoughts podcast too today note that, you know, an additional forward, yep, in addition to some defensive help, which is consistent with what we've been talking about, right? Headline item, defender.
Yep.
Sub items, a right-handed forward who can help you score on the power play and or
win draws for you.
A guy who can win draws. And ideally, that player is one guy, right? Like, yeah, ideally,
that'd be nice.
Ideally, you can find someone who can do both. So, you know, I think it's an interesting dynamic. The Desharnais thing, we got a funny text in that I liked. Unsigned, I believe, but someone said, oh yeah, let's see if it was signed. It was not. Vinny Desharnais, you are a Chicago Blackhawk, which is exactly right.
Where,
right?
The Canucks ship the guys they're done with. The Dickinson, Mikheyev.
Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin standing on Pride Rock, and it's like, everything you see will be yours, except that elephant graveyard over there.
That's in Chicago.
That's the Chicago Blackhawks area. That's where we send our mistakes.
The Canucks version of the Island of Misfit Toys.
100%. Jason Dickinson. Yeah,
you can go hang out with Billy McKay in Chicago.
Is there anyone else? Anthony Beauvillier.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah. It's a strong pipeline that Alvin and his buddy Kyle Davidson have going on. So, anyway, all of that makes sense to me, right? Like, all of that makes sense to me. I think it all squares the Desharnais side of this. I just want to note, I know it hasn't worked out, but there have been moments. I'm going to keep banging my fist on the table and saying there have been moments where that Desharnais-Brännström pair in sheltered minutes have had really good moments.
They played really good hockey. They had stretches where they got good results.
Yeah.
Like, you were laying out the positive case for Forbort Friedman, right? And it's like, hey, can you go, 10 games with just, winning the shot attempt battle, not outrageously, but just, 52-53%, limiting with what's happening. Like, that's what that pairing was doing for a while there, right?
We also have a texter in who says Desharnais for Connor Murphy confirmed. Now, obviously the Canucks would have to add a lot to pry Connor Murphy out of Chicago. I don't think Chicago should be in the business really of trading their good players, but Connor Murphy is a good player. And by all accounts, the best dude.
Oh.
Like, if you wanted to bring a good vibes dude in, Connor Murphy would fit the bill. So that's, by the way, exactly why Chicago should absolutely not
do it.
They need all the vibes that they can get.
But Desharnais is a great vibe as well.
Desharnais is a great vibe, but
It's hard to be a good vibe when you're like not playing well and getting scratched. You know what I mean? That reduces the effectiveness of your vibes.
And Connor Murphy is the sort of guy where I'd be like, I'd be curious to see him with Hughes and then Hronek with Soucy, right? Like, Connor Murphy's a totally different caliber of player where we're talking about a fringe 2-3, right? Like, where you put more emphasis on the three, but you at least say
leave the possibility open.
He's a 2-3, right? He's one of those. Anyway, so Desharnais, it hasn't worked out. It was always experimental. I always thought the club was going to let the Forest experiment on the blue line track through. I mean, what was I saying about Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Reporting like in the summer?
Yeah, 30 games-ish, which is right around where we are.
In the summer, there was going to be a shot given to this club doubling down on their let's keep everybody outside with a bunch of tall drinks of water on the back end experiment. And, I think there was some internal trepidation about that experiment. Like, I don't think this club went out and sort of added to this quote-unquote identity of size on the back end with a full 100% buy-in to their own brand of winning hockey. Like, I think there was an understanding that we'll see if we can move the puck well enough. We'll see if it works. It worked so well last season. We'll try, but we're not going to spend a ton of money or commit a ton of term into this approach. And so Forbort gets 1 year and Desharnais gets two. And, at the end of the day, Desharnais might not be easy to move given that he hasn't really fit in, right? And he has some term. Maybe it's one where if the club does decide to move on, they're not getting value back. Absolutely a possibility there. But it's also not going to be one that's like problematic in any.
No, it's not like it's like, oh, you have to attach a second round pick or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To get off of it.
Like, I saw some people posting on Twitter, like the Canucks trying to move Desharnais on the trade block. And it was like that meme of the record player. Like, it doesn't work, but might be fun to fix. Right.
So
I don't.
Good.
It's such a good meme, but I don't think Desharnais is there necessarily in the estimation of the league. I think his run of form down the stretch with the Oilers last season, obviously struggled in the playoffs, but he was banged up. I think there's enough teams that would look around and be like, this guy's been a killer penalty killer. He's got unique attributes.
And he's a right-handed D.
He's a tall right-handed D. There's a reason he got 2 years of term from the Canucks.
And
right?
He's contributed meaningfully to winning teams. Like, he really has. So,
I don't think that would be one that they'd get stuck on if they do decide that this experiment needs to be, Dr. Joe over MD.
Oh gosh, you liked it so much on Twitter, you brought it.
Dr. Joseph over MD.
Paging Dr. Joseph over. That sounds like a gambling tout's name. Joe Overs.
Yeah, you're right, it does. Jimmy the Greek and
Joe Overs.
No, Jimmy the Greek and his physician. Dr. Joe Over MD.
Oh my goodness. All right. Okay, so Lena, are you ready to play this clip? Okay, sorry. Lena's like wild, like hopping back and forth between roles and chairs back there. She's doing an incredible job. I don't want to put her on the spot. So the other thing from 32 Thoughts today, which of course generating a lot of interest, a lot of chatter in the market, is Friedman talking a little bit about JT Miller's return and, of course, all of the benefits, many of which we saw on display for the Canucks last night, and maybe some of the challenges and the dynamic happening as JT Miller returns to the team. It was a pretty in-depth discussion. We won't play all of it, but here's a snippet of what Elliot Friedman had to say about JT Miller rejoining
the
Canucks.
Before you step on the ice for a game, you could sense within the room it's different for all the right reasons in Vancouver.
And it has to stay that way. Like, I think he has to bend and the other guys have to bend. Everybody has to bend a little bit. It's like a podcast, Kyle. You've got your talents. I've got my talents, although I'm still trying to discover exactly what those are. And we have to bend them together to make the podcast good. And hopefully, by the time we are both fired, we will find a way to do that.
That's Elliot Friedman speaking a little bit just about the dynamic. And again, there's some other stuff in 32 Thoughts. I'd encourage you to go check it out to kind of get the full context, right? Talking about, you know, JT Miller being a unique player, different personality than the other players have. So they like that, but it has to work within the team concept. And this continues to be a really fascinating story to follow. Of course, when the news broke that JT Miller was taking a leave of absence for personal reasons, tons of questions, tons of curiosity, understandably so, about what was going on. JT Miller, totally understandably, yesterday, as we talked about on the show, and well within his rights, declines to get into any of the underlying issues. And he said, you know, I don't want to look backwards. I want to look forwards. I did find it striking that in the first 32 Thoughts, you know, Elliot Friedman, the most plugged in insider in the world of hockey. He's always on top of what's going on with the Canucks. The one concrete thing I would say I'm taking away from what Elliot Friedman had to say there is that he's not treating JT Miller and a team dynamic and the leave of absence as something that is done and in the past. He's more so treating it as an ongoing story, right? And he's not saying the team dynamic is what caused JT Miller to take a leave of absence, right? I want to be very clear. That's not what Elliot Friedman is saying. But I do think he's implying a link, right? Just talking about, you know, hey, okay, now that he's back, they have to keep working on the dynamic. There's guys have to bend. Guys have to compromise. There's only so much we can concretely say as a result of that, but I definitely think it was worth playing and just noting that Elliot Friedman, again, implying that this is an ongoing situation that the team will need to monitor, that people will need to work at, that will require effort and attention to get the team and the players playing their best.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of string of reports from Elliot here, I think are interesting because, you know, you also have the toughen up one from earlier in the season.
Yep.
And I think when you do piece them together, and this is coming from Friedman, not from me, right? Just to summarize it, it's like there's clearly some concern, at least based off of if you interpret Elliot's reporting over the past 6 weeks, there is a picture that's being painted of some level of concern about locker room dynamics for this group.
Yep.
Organizationally speaking. And, you know, not that it necessarily played out or resulted, as you quite rightly note, in Miller's absence, but that in sort of reintegrating the full team together, it's something that we have to be mindful of. That,
yeah,
you know, a lot of people have to bend, as it were, in Friedman's sort of telling of it to make this work. And look, that's okay, right? You don't.
Yeah, none of this, even the way we're describing it, and obviously we're, you know, we're inferring things here and we're having to connect the dots. Obviously we have scant information.
Well, we have scant information and we can't really ask.
Yeah, of course. But nothing we're describing is like, and that's why the Canucks are doomed to fail. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, there's a situation they'll have to manage. We don't exactly know the contours of that. It's worth noting that it exists in all likelihood. It certainly sounds like it anyways. and that they'll have to manage it. But again, it's, you know, team. This is what teams have to go through. Lots of teams have to go through.
Yes.
Uncomfortable or awkward locker room dynamics during the course of a season, right? That require attention, that require thoughtful, a thoughtful approach to managing them. So it's not a doomsday scenario for the Canucks by any stretch, but I just think, I mean, it's a fascinating one. That's for sure. And I don't think it's something we can ignore when, again, reporters like Elliot Friedman, and there's been others, you know, you go back to the Paul Bissonnette chatter on Spitting Chicklets, right?
Yeah, and Bissonnette's not missing when it comes to player news.
Player dynamics. No.
Just like he's not missing while taking on six guys in a Scottsdale parking lot.
The two situations he is locked in on. Fighting guys in a Scottsdale parking lot and reporting news about NHL players. There you go. That's Paul Bissonnette.
Being an entertaining host on a broadcast. I mean,
that's true.
Biz rules. But anyway, there's something here. There's something here. We aren't likely to get a full picture or answers. We'll keep working to report it out. But this is also why, you know, the next time you hear a reporter ask a question of a player and you think it's rude and are like, hey, don't ask that. Like, okay, but you want to know. So do you want the reporter to do their job or not? Like, your call. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated about it. It is what it is.
It's a weird situation. And it's one of those things where every report, it's not like it's satisfying anyone's curiosity, right? You know, I don't think anyone is like listening to that 32 thoughts and is like, all right, that's all I need to know. It's like, wow, now I'm really curious about what's going on in the locker room.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get to this point too, where, you know, the vacuum of information, the lack of information, I think we've seen it in this marketplace, not on our program, not in terms of what we've brought up, but in terms of what we've seen in our inboxes or in our Twitter mentions or in various Canucks online spaces. Like, it doesn't serve anybody, right? Like, it doesn't serve the player. Some of the rumors, Friedman alluded to it over the podcast, were like unspeakable, like really heinous stuff was mm-hmm. being speculated about publicly among Canucks fans and such. And, you know, I just, at some point, some sort of way to clear the air would be, some sunlight would help disinfect, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, although I also say, I think you're right about that. You know, we talked about, okay, there's some sort of dynamic here that needs managing, and that's not uncommon.
Yeah, and it could be as simple as, like, it's stressful.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as, like...
But also, you know what the best way to manage those dynamics are is winning games. Across any sport,
100%.
Any team, right? Yep. Everyone gets happier. Everyone gets less stressed. Everyone's having more fun, getting along better if you're winning games. They're healthy now. Demko's back. Miller's back. Yes, Hronik's still out. But other than that, you've got your team. Forbort's back even, right? If you can put yourself in a position to have a really nice run here going into Christmas, right, come out of the new year or come into the new year in a good position in the standings, you can have all of the questions about the team dynamic that you want. But if you're getting the job done consistently on the ice, it becomes so much easier to manage all of those things, right? And Friedman even alluded to that. He said in the podcast, hey, they won and Miller played well, so right now it's no big deal. If they'd gotten their butts kicked and Miller didn't play well, we might all be having different conversations today. That's paraphrasing what Elliot Friedman had to say, but there's obvious truth to that. Winning makes everything so much easier for these guys.
Well, and the other part of this is, like, what's going to happen? How do we discuss or caption, right, the next time Miller misses shifts at the end of a period, which we've seen occasionally, right? Or the next time someone expresses their temper on the bench, like stuff that should be, you know, how do we talk about it, right? In this vacuum of information.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's going to be very difficult to contextualize or explain, you know, some team performance things in the absence of any information whatsoever. All we kind of know is, key player was going through it, is back in the lineup, played well in his debut, and it was good to see him.
Yep.
And Canucks fans were clearly excited about it. So
yeah, they were very excited about it, absolutely. And you could see the difference it made in the lineup. All right, we'll take a break there. Again, I feel like we're doing a pretty good job talking about this story in whatever way we can, not to pat ourselves on the back.
I don't know.
But it's a tricky one.
Bob in the old DL hood says, actually, you can ignore the story. You simply don't know. Move on. Well,
I don't know.
We always say that.
I don't think
there
you
is
can
so
completely
much,
ignore it.
There is so much else to talk about. Which is why when I see Canucks fans on the street, when Canucks fans recognize me in places, the thing they always they never ask me is about JT Miller.
Yes. They're always like, what do you think about Derek Forbort's return?
You're a big Mark Friedman guy, right? Like, come on. What are Canucks fans talking about? What do they want to know? We all know. So are we going to talk about what the city's talking about, or are we going to ignore it? I mean,
yeah,
we do not know. And we caption that as honestly as we can while trying to be as responsible as possible,
yeah,
and avoid speculating while also referring to reports from some of the most plugged in people in the league, guys like Paul Bissonnette and Elliot Friedman. And that's the best that we can do. Hopefully this club, hopefully it's not like a story that shapes outcomes for this team.
Yes.
Down the stretch.
Yeah. Hopefully it does fade to the background. Right now it's not. Hopefully it does at some point. All right. We'll take a break. We'll turn the page. Still lots to get into from the game last night and looking ahead to the weekend as well. So we'll talk about that. We can take your text. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final hour of the week for the show here coming up next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts in now. And Canucks Talk is brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. It's a great day for hockey. It's also a great day to support your local food bank. The Greater Vancouver Food Bank, we're partnering up with them for Food Bank Friday here on our station, as well as on Jack 1130 and Sonic, our sister stations here at Rogers Radio. We've raised over $30,000 so far, but we're trying to do a lot more today before the deadline at 6 p.m. We need your help, and it's just a fantastic way to give back, to support your community at this time of year. The food bank has a buying power of 2-1, but that goes up to 15-1 on fresh items. So your donation goes a long, long way. They support more than 15,000 people monthly across Vancouver, Burnaby, New West, and the North Shore. 28% of those are children. They're registering 500 plus new clients every month. So there is a need. And again, as I said off the top of the show, I know it's the holiday season. I know everyone's budget gets stretched at this time of year. We all know about the cost of living, but if you are able to give a little bit can go a long way. Here's how you do it. Here's how you take part in Food Bank Friday. You can do the easiest way. Go text the carrot emoji, 30333. Again, that's the carrot emoji. You text it to 30333. You'll be able to donate your choice of $5, $10, or $25. You can also go to our website, sportsnet.ca/650, to find a donation link for the Greater Vancouver Food Bank on our website. We've also got, I want to shout out the Graham and Leah Collings and the Collings Stevens Family Foundation, as well as an anonymous donor. Both matching donations, dollar to dollar, up to the first $75,000. So we still got a ways to go to hit that, but thank you to those donors for the matching. And again, that means your dollars or your money that you donate is going to go even farther when you send it to the food bank for Food Bank Friday. So again, 30333, send in the carrot emoji and you'll have your chance to donate $5, $10, or $25 as part of Food Bank Friday. All right. As I mentioned, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And one player we haven't really talked about, just in passing from last night's game, picks up another shutout already, is Kevin Lankinen in the crease. And as you said, that was a very solid defensive performance from the Vancouver Canucks overall. So it's not as if Lankinen had to stand on his head and steal the game for them, but still, it's another shutout performance for Kevin Lankinen. Now, I have seen some people to spin this off to the question of, all right, well, who should start against the Boston Bruins when they come to town on Saturday? Am I totally out to lunch when I say it's an easy decision to go with Thatcher Demko?
Nope.
Like, that's 100% the call, right?
Very easy decision.
Yeah.
And not in deference to him as, like, the better option, but in deference to him working his way back.
Yes. I don't think you want him cold for long stretches after just getting back, right? And in fact, I think in some ways, they're in a pretty close to ideal situation here. Like, doesn't alternating starts for Thatcher Demko for the foreseeable future make a ton of sense? Regular work with built-in extended rest?
Well, at some point, you're going to want to test how your higher ceiling option deals both physically and performance-wise with the rigors of playing every other day, because you want him playing every other day for 60 days if you're going to get to where you actually really want to get to in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So at some point, ramping up makes sense. Guy's played one game in 9 months, and he recovered well, and he practiced the next day, and he backed up the day after that. And that's awesome. Excellent news across the board. Now, in working his way back, the schedule sets up to do the following. Demko plays against the offensively challenged Boston Bruins. Love that. Lankinen, the sharper goalie at the moment, and that's not an indication of talent. That's an indication of one guy's been playing for months as a number one, and one guy is about to play his second game. Hope you'd expect in 9 months tomorrow, coming off an unprecedented injury. Lankinen gets the high-octane Colorado Avalanche. Love that. Demko gets the plucky but non-elite Utah Hockey Club the following Wednesday. Lankinen plays the second night of a back-to-back against the Vegas Golden Knights. Do not deviate from that. That is perfect.
No, it's set up really well. It's set up really, really well for them. And it's just an easy decision to me. Like, isn't this the ideal place where you just rotate your goalies? You're getting rest for Lankinen, who's excellent, who's been excellent for you. You're giving Demko the time he needs to work on his recovery, but you're also getting him steady work. I don't think you could ask for a better situation right now, given the circumstances of Demko's recovery.
No, I actually think the danger is that you reward Lankinen for the shutout.
Right.
Because sometimes teams like deviate from a plan because a guy had a shutout, and there's like a luck factor in hockey. There's a shutout. Shutouts carry weight for goaltenders, right? And sometimes you want to ride a goaltender coming off of a shutout, but do not deviate from what makes the most sense. So to me, that's the risk. Is that you ride Lankinen when...
Well, especially because... first of all, how ironic would that be if the Canucks didn't give Demko like the optimal ramp-up program because they were riding another goalie in December and January, like they've done so many times with Thatcher Demko.
Not giving him the optimal rest.
In his career. Anyways, but the thing is, you want to win the division. And Edmonton's playing really well. Vegas is playing really well. I understand that you can't be desperate for that goal in December and January when you are in a very comfortable position for a playoff spot. Yes. And again, it's not as if, you know, if you're going back and forth between Thatcher Demko, we'll see between Thatcher Demko and Kevin Lankinen. We'll see how his performance progresses here and how he looks over the next few games that he gets in. But you should have full confidence in both of those options. You shouldn't need to defer to Kevin Lankinen because you feel like he's the best option to get you 2 points, right?
No.
Like, you've built up enough of a cushion in the standings, and Demko is Thatcher Demko.
Have you?
Not to be desperate.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not like, oh, man, we'd love to give Thatcher Demko this start, but we just really need these 2 points. You're not there. Maybe you get there, and the math changes, but you're not there right now.
No, I mean, you are the fifth highest point percentage team in the West.
Yeah.
Right now, it is tight with Edmonton. And you are one regulation loss away from it being tight with Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
So the margin, there's no margin for error. And I still think you have to conduct yourself with winning game to game first and foremost as a priority. I don't think this team, we saw last year that Tocchet just like significantly reduced Miller, Hronek, Hughes' ice time in particular, those three down the stretch last season. Like, this team did hit a point where they were like, they took their foot off the pedal.
Yeah.
And that was completely right, by the way, especially with what we later saw in terms of Hronek's like health, for example. So, or at least what Jeff Patterson did. Sorry. that end of year exchange was just so good.
It was a classic.
I don't think this team can... This team does have to keep the short-term focus on winning game to game, but the big picture here is ramp up Demko, and right now, before Christmas, especially before Christmas, as Demko's like very early in his way working back, because I do think the time will come where the team's best interests and best long-term interests, regardless of their short-term status, like unless they're truly scrapping for a playoff picture, is going to be to find out what you're going to be able to do in terms of Demko ramping up to the point that he's playing every other day. At some point, you're going to have to, to steal Demko's phrase, put him through hell, right? Put the knee through hell was Demko's phrase. Put him through hell. See how he's going to hold up. Because when you're going into the playoffs, like, you're not going to want to switch goaltenders mid-series. You're not going to want to give, if you get one of those unlucky back-to-back schedules, which happen pretty regularly in the Stanley Cup playoffs because of other show bookings and on, like, you're not going to want to alternate goaltenders or rest a guy in the play. Like, you have to be able to be like, this is our starter and we're going with him. And certainly that's how Rutherford thinks. Like, that's for sure how this team wants to approach it. And we know that Tocchet also rides one guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's his preference. So, you know, you are going to reach that point. You don't have to be there before Christmas. Right now, I want to see him alternate. I think it's pretty clearly what they should do, barring, you know, setbacks or any unanticipated sort of forks in the road. As for the controversy talk, because you know this market.
Well, Don Taylor was like openly wish casting for a goalie controversy on the show today. He was like, it would be great. He wants it.
So Vancouver. I love it.
You know what? Good. So good.
You know what, though? That's just because Don Taylor's the most Vancouver person, Burnaby person in the history of the planet. Right?
Lower mainland, sure. Yeah.
This market just loves
a goalie controversy.
A goalie controversy. It's like when things are settled in the Canucks Nets, it's like,
here's my spin on it.
What's going on?
Is there a goalie controversy? Because obviously there is not. They've got a great goalie situation right now. When's the earliest date when there could plausibly be a goaltending controversy? Because to me,
I think the problem with goalie controversy is it implies something very specific.
Okay.
Okay. The goalie controversy implies that game to game, there is a hot amount of debate about which player should start so that the team can win.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the Canucks have that. And I don't think they'll get there this season until the playoffs.
Okay. I was going to say it's either game one of the playoffs or like April. And and if there's a gap in performance, like going into the second week of April between Demko and Lankanen.
Well, but Lankanen has to be so much better for that gap to be meaningful. Like, truly, we have
not
to.
Not for there. I don't think so. Before you're starting game one of the playoffs?
I think it has to be like at least like 9:15 versus 9:10 or something like it has,
yeah, okay.
Or 9:15 versus 9:05. Like,
okay.
It has to be
like
significant.
A 10% gap.
I think it has to be significant because as good as Lankanen has performed, there's a ceiling on Demko's performance. That provided you're comfortable that he's not physically limited or that he needs to be rested more than...
That as long as the floor hasn't dropped out, you're going to be chasing that upside with Thatcher Demko.
You should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's like the bar that Lankanen's performance is going to have to leap over for it to be a meaningful controversy in my mind is extremely high. Where I think it gets more interesting, right? Where I think there's grounds for disagreement, where I think there's real stress in how the Canucks should be approaching this from an optimal decision-making standpoint is when you put the bigger picture business decisions and how they will filter through to Canucks choices down the stretch and into the postseason and net sort of into context, right? So Demko's got 2 years left on this $5 million.
Yeah, 1 year left after this.
This season and the rest of next.
Yeah.
So 2 seasons remaining. But that means he becomes extension eligible beyond this season. Lankanen obviously is expiring. He's a UFA and signed at a value clip for the Canucks. At the very least, you would think he's trending to earn high-level backup, low-level 1B money as an unrestricted free agent. At the very least, right?
He
could put himself in a different tier
over
the stretch, but like I think it would take a lot. That's my gut anyway.
Okay. So right? we're talking like $3 million?
For sure you're talking 2.5. I mean, the like Cam Talbot 2.5 times 2, Anthony Stolarz 2.5 times 2, Nedeljkovic 2.5 times 2, Skinner got the 2.6 times 3 from Edmonton. That was like right before his breakout. Vejmelka 3 times 2.75. Like at the very least, you're talking 5 to 5.5 total money, over at least 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's like bare minimum. And so this club is going to face some decision points with both players, I think, beyond the season, because if they want to wait on Demko, given Demko's injury status and on, I think that's a pretty complicated decision from a relationship management perspective, obviously. And then Lankinen, you know, this team is, Rutherford philosophically has not paid backups throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
And that career spanned a fairly hefty length of time, right? They also have Shelov's signed for next season on a one-way. There's a lot of different balls in the air. I mean, I think the question number one that you're going to have to sort through in sort of calibrating this, and where, again, I think there is going to be some interest and stress and like realistic things for us to unpack and dissect and second guess and Monday morning quarterback down the stretch run, is like, how much does Demko have to show you from a physical durability standpoint between now and the end of the season before you're comfortable extending him? Because, you know, I was going over the Lankinen money there, but with Demko, you're talking for sure. Swayman and Sorokin and Hellebuck are all 8+. You know, I don't know that Demko gets quite to that point durability
that's
issues.
The big right? Like, but so much of what he's going to get depends on what happens
that's
over
what
the
saying.
Next 4 months here.
100%. Right? So there's so much uncertainty there. And the range of outcomes, right? Like, if Demko is able to hold down a workhorse workload, get into the playoffs, play every day, stay healthy, perform like Demko probably will perform if he's in, because he's incredible, you know, you're absolutely talking about an $8.5 million valuation.
You're also talking about an asset that has trade value probably all of a sudden.
In Demko.
Right? Like, because the two things are linked.
Right.
Either he's not putting himself in a position to get that $8 million extension because questions about his durability, and therefore his trade value is, you know, extremely limited to none, potentially. Or he's answering some questions and he's checking some boxes, and then his contract value goes up, but so does his demand.
I hadn't even considered it that way. I was just thinking about it from a Canucks perspective. But of course, you're right. If he's an $8 million player, he's also a desirable asset.
He has value.
And he will be, provided that he's like baseline healthy. And then you've got the Lankinen factor, right? And then all of that sort of congealing with, like, how much can you commit to a goaltender who's dealt with a unprecedented injury,
mm-hmm.
right? You know that he's going to work his absolute tail off and approach it with the utmost professionalism in terms of managing his recovery and rehab and on, but, right, there is that element of, I suppose, like, do you need a do you need to buy an insurance policy? Do you need to deviate from how this club has and how Rutherford has typically done business by spending on a backup, by maybe keeping Lankinen in-house? So, again, I think the situation is a good one. I think the idea of a controversy is probably a little overwrought in the short term. And I think Lankinen's going to have to perform at a preposterously high level for it to be a meaningful controversy going into the playoffs, and or Demko is going to need to really struggle, which I doubt, especially after seeing him play on Tuesday against the Blues, or is going to have some sort of setback, which, you know, I really hope doesn't happen for his sake. The day-to-day decision-making, I think, is relatively straightforward, but the big picture here, I think, could get really complicated and is exceptionally high stakes from a how the business decisions on both players will filter into how the club handles their platoon down the stretch.
And I guess the key question for me is, for the Canucks specifically, so not like league-wide perception, but for the Canucks specifically, how much is their interest in a Demko extension contingent on his health for the rest of the season, right? Obviously, it is to some extent, but is it a case of, are they looking at this and saying, okay, if this guy is healthy and plays really well down the stretch, then he's a priority for us to sign? Or are they looking at it and saying, you know, well, even if he does do that, we still have some major questions and we're going to explore our options? That's the key thing, I think, that's going to dictate where this goes. But it is a fascinating situation, right? I think it's from an on-ice perspective, it's a very, very positive situation for the Canucks to find themselves in with their situation in the crease. But, man, depending on how the rest of the season goes, how the playoffs go, all of that, it could get really fascinating in the offseason. Austin Langley texts in, if Lankinen is under $3 million on an AAV, you do that tomorrow, no?
Well, not if you really want Thatcher Demko around long term, right? Because then, as you said, they don't have a history. Jim Rutherford doesn't have a history of investing significantly in the backup position. And if you want to at least leave the door open for signing Thatcher Demko to, you know, a long term $8 million plus extension or something like that, or $7.5 million plus extension, I don't know that you would want to give Kevin Lankin in a $3 million deal to be here next year, as well as he's played. All of a sudden, you're spending an awful lot on your goaltending position if you do that. So I hear what you're saying, Austin, right? Like on the face of it, it looks like a great deal for what Kevin Lankinen's giving you right now. But if you're planning for Thatcher Demko to be here beyond his current contract, then it might not make a ton of sense to do that for Kevin Lankinen. I don't know. It's a thorny situation. Brandon in Vancouver says, goalies don't get much return, though. I don't think that the average annual value means as much regarding his value on the market. That's true, but it's still, like, if teams are willing to commit that cap space, there's some asset, there's some value.
I mean,
that's associated with that.
I don't know. Like, the thing is goalies as good as Demko don't get traded.
Yes.
Right. So and so the idea that they don't have a ton of value, I don't really think holds water just based off of what we've seen like lately, like Korpisalo and a first round pick for Ullmark with the Senators retaining on Korpisalo. The Flames got a first round draft pick and Kevin Ball. Pretty interesting young stay at home defender, like a player who, by the way, would be awesome. An awesome fit with how Tocchet wants to play, were he in Vancouver. He got a so that's, you know, we saw it this season, like goaltenders who are absolutely Demko's contemporaries and frankly are not at Demko's level when he's healthy. And by the way, are similarly had 1 year left on their deal. So literally on the exact same contract timeline that the Canucks would be with Demko following this season, just netted first round picks. That's significant trade value. Do you know how quickly the Canucks would love to have a first-round pick that they could quickly flip for something that wasn't a first-round pick? They would love that.
It's their favorite thing.
They'd rather have a healthy Demko. Like, yes. No mistake. But I'm just saying, like, goalies do have trade value. We never see goalies of Demko's caliber dealt anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think you need to re-examine that prior. I don't think that's right.
It's an interesting dynamic too, right? Because if you're another team around the league and Demko performs well in the playoffs, if you're a Stanley Cup contender, right? And there's always two or three really good teams that are very concerned about their goaltending, right? We've seen Colorado try to address it this year. You know, it's been Toronto in the past. It always happens, right? There are teams, Carolina's had this issue in the past. If you're a Stanley Cup contender and he does a really good short-term job in the playoffs this year, I don't even know how much you're concerned about the contract, right? You could just look at it as like, hey, it's a one-year rental. Let's give ourselves a shot in the playoffs with this guy. That's how the Canucks might look at it as well, right? So there's a million different ways you could approach this, and so much of it depends on how healthy he stays, how he performs, what this team is able to do in the playoffs, how he looks in the playoffs. But it's going to be a really, really interesting, thorny decision for the team to try to tackle here in the offseason.
Just want to quickly note this one. We had a texter text in, how many goalies in the last 10 years getting paid over $5 million per year have won the Stanley Cup? A lot. We just saw Sergei Bobrovsky win the Stanley Cup.
Yes.
Sergei Bobrovsky, I mean, we have seen some Aiden Hills, don't get me wrong, right? We saw Vasilevsky win one on his bridge and one at $9 million, right? The Colorado Avalanche, was that?
That was Kemper.
Kemper.
I believe, right? Who I think was... Was he making like right around five, four and a half, something like that?
I believe so, but I'll just quickly double check. 3.5.
Yeah.
3.5. So
yeah, and then he got up to 5 on the next deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Binnington obviously was not making much.
Yeah.
But Holtby was paid. Holtby was paid. Matt Murray was paid for the second. No, Matt Murray was entry level, but they had Marc-Andre Fleury at 7+ on the roster, and then Corey Crawford was paid, and Jonathan Quick was paid, and that takes us all the way back to Tim Thomas, who was mid-paid. So, you know, 80% of the Cup winners the last 10 years have been paid goalies.
Yeah, so it can happen.
The fact is that slicing cup winners by cap hits, I tend not to think is helpful. Like, oh, you can't win a cup with a $10 million player. It's like, no, there's only like four of them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see it happen every year now that they're more common. Calm down.
All right, that takes us to the break, and we will be joined by our guy, Dmitry Filipovich. I have an idea for what we should draft.
Oh, good, because I'm completely brainless at the moment.
So we'll talk to Dmitry. We'll do a draft to wrap up the week here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintec Studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. We're brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley, shop in store or online at thehockeyshop.com. Just before we get to our guest, quick Canucks roster update. They have assigned Mark Friedman, Atu Ratu, and Max Sasson to Abbotsford. Of course, none of them require waivers, so they're tolling that cap space, baby.
Sweet, sweet cap space.
Sweet, sweet cap space. And the reward for Mark Friedman and Max Sasson having standout games last night, get out to Abbotsford, fellas.
Yeah.
Day off, not for you. You got to go to Abbotsford. Hey, it's all for the betterment of the team. All for the betterment of the team.
I mean, at least Mark Friedman has a one way.
That's
so
true.
So at least
it doesn't dock his pay.
Yeah, at least he doesn't get hit in the wallet.
That's true.
I think Sasson gets hit in the wallet. That sucks.
Oh well.
It's a pretty significant hit.
That's what you got to do sometimes. All right. Anyways, we wanted to pass that along, but now
imagine having a job though where it was like, and today you make 1/10 your usual salary.
Yeah. After you had the best moment of your professional career.
Now, granted, any player would just be like, I've made an NHL salary for 15 of the last 25 days. It's fine.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
But nonetheless,
it's part of the business.
It is.
We're just joking. Anyways, now joining us in studio, he hosts the Hockey PDOcast here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He is our pal, Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, Dmitry?
Fellas, we're here to talk guys getting sent down to the AHL. For paper transactions, do they actually have to make the trip?
No.
No, so not that going from Vancouver to Abbotsford.
So first, they're not paper transactions, but They're in fact transactions. Sorry, this has been one of my
Transcom mad at me for calling them paper transactions once.
There's only paper transactions only exist ahead of the trade deadline.
I just remember when the Ducks kept sending Shea Theodore to San Diego every single day for like a month straight.
Well, this is a Bob Murray special. Bob Murray was like the first guy to toll cap space like this, and that's why the Ducks like arguably overtraded. Remember every year at the deadline they'd have like a completely different team during their contention window. But this was Bob Murray was like the guy who did this the most for sure. And back then you did have to report. The rule changed like 2018, 2019 when I was still working for the Panthers. In any event.
And that was the most egregious thing that the Ducks did with Shea Theodore.
Their worst Shea Theodore related decision. All right. Looking ahead to the Canucks opponents, they've just played Boston.
Yep.
Has Joe Sakko saved this? Do we need to talk about the Bruins?
You know what? I don't think we need to talk about any of these upcoming opponents.
What are you talking about? A bunch of new opponents, Western Conference contenders?
I want to talk Pacific Division.
All right. You do whatever you want.
I'm sure you run the interview. I'm sure your listeners want to hear about the fact that the Bruins have lost 13-2 in their two most recent games, though.
Okay.
That's pretty exciting.
That is pretty exciting, including getting dusted by the Kraken.
Yep, 5-1. They lost to Winnipeg 8-1 in their previous game.
Yikes.
I mean, listen, I think we knew like they had that little bit of a coaching bump after Joe Sakko took over.
Yeah.
A lot of that was schedule-based. It was a pretty soft schedule for them. Then they had a couple of come-from-behind overtime wins. They've lost these two most recent ones. I know we've talked about this previously on this program. I'm very skeptical that they're going to be in the playoffs this year for the first time in seemingly forever, and I think that one wildcard spot is actually legitimately open in the East.
So then they play the Avs. The Avs have more depth now a little bit. Their depth crisis appears to be over. They seem to be playing better hockey. They're a huge... I mean, the Canucks just kind of handled pretty well the Barkov-Forsling minutes against the Panthers. are the Makar McKinnon minutes? How do you rate the difficulty relative to
you've got
what
like
the Canucks just
old
saw?
Habs on the brain? Eric Cole, Andre Markov.
Right. I called Ian Cole Eric Cole earlier too. Yeah,
Eric Cole used to rock.
Thank you.
We paused the show to mention that. Don't worry. Eric Cole.
That's amazing.
I think I referred to him as, along with Ovechkin, the coolest power forward of the last 25 years.
He was very cool, especially on a per game basis. Yeah, I mean, the Makar McKinnon minutes are terrifying. Obviously, you're kind of just on the edge of your seat the entire time. I'm curious to see if Mackenzie Blackwood will make his Avs debut by then. I think he was sick when they first acquired him, and then he was sitting on the bench as the backup yesterday against Utah, so he might be back in there. Yeah, I mean, especially when Nichushkin back now, they have a bit more depth up front. They did lose to Utah, but it was coming back off of a long Eastern Conference road trip for them. Usually see that a little bit of that sort of lull in performance when you come back from a trip like that. So, yeah, I mean, this Avs team, if you look, I think they're still in a wild card spot right now. They're around 15th or 16th in the league in point percentage, so certainly not where you'd expect. But I think the way they're playing now, and especially the way their depth chart looks, it's much more closely resembling what you'd expect compared to what we saw from the first like 2 months or whatever the season from them.
Where do you stand on the debate between the merits of Cale Makar's season and Quinn Hughes' season?
Yeah, I'm going to take the controversial stance that I think both are very good.
What? How dare you?
I have Quinn Hughes as number one on my fake Norris ballot through 30 games or so this season. I think they're very comparable on a points perspective, right? In terms of all the scoring stats, everything you'd expect. I just think what Quinn Hughes has to do in terms of his quality of line mates, how much of the heavy lifting he has to do with the puck on his stick. If you look, he's like top five in the league in possession time with the puck on his stick, whereas Makar is behind both McKinnon and Rantanen on his own team. Makar, of course, gets to play a significant portion of his minutes at 5-on-5 with Nathan McKinnon, which certainly helps. So I think they're both clearly the top two in the league. I'd have Zach Werenski third on my Norris ballot, but I do think I give a slight edge to Hughes based on the way he's played.
I just don't know how many players, if any, are being asked to do more by their team than Quinn Hughes.
Right.
Like the responsibility he has in all three zones is off the charts. And, you know, maybe you could say, well, if Cale Makar was in a situation like that, could he rise to the occasion?
He probably could,
but he's not doing it right now. Quinn Hughes is being asked to do it, and it's pretty remarkable to watch. All right, that's Colorado, unless you have anything else on the ass you didn't even want to talk about in the first place.
No,
so
I want to
screw that.
And I do want to talk about Utah, but I mostly just want to talk about Michael Kesslering.
Our guy. Yeah. I mean, he's awesome. He's like 6'4", moves incredibly well, right-handed, 24 years old. It's like, man, this is one of the rarest player types you could find in the league, and they got him from Edmonton at the trade deadline for
Nick Bjugstad
expiring deal.
And then they re-signed Nick Bjugstad.
They did, which
incredible
I wish teams
work.
Did more often.
Yeah.
I love when teams do that.
I know. The loan. I love the loan.
Oh, so good. Kesslering is awesome. He had a Gordie Howe hat trick in like the second period alone over the weekend against the Buffalo Sabres. He's really good. Like when they play him, when he's on the ice, they're winning all of the 5-on-5 minutes. He plays with Ian Cole some. He plays with Michael Sergachev at times as well. And yeah, he's one of their most fun players, both him and Cooley. I'd say Cooley has elevated himself to potentially being like their best player so far this season.
Why can't Utah break through here?
Well, they've been playing a lot better lately. I think they're 6-2-2 in their last 10 games after a bit of a down stretch there in November. I mean,
they're good though.
I think like, they're pretty good, yeah.
Every time I watch them play, I think they're good. And then I look at their underlying profile and it's all sparkling, like standout.
Yeah.
I just can't figure out why they're not really good. Are they just too young? Is it?
I don't know about that. I think they kind of have broken through in the sense that they're 17th in the league in point percentage. I think Don Lucic's model has them around like 30% playoff probability. Like that's obviously not ideal. I don't think they've necessarily reached their ceiling. I think it's a matter of the state of the West right now where you look, and I know Calgary is kind of disrupting that a little bit. But the eight teams are pretty solidified right now in terms of who's going to make it in the playoffs out West. And so Utah's just on the edge of that. But I think they're legitimately good. Like they've been playing much, much better over the past, two, 3 weeks.
Vegas. I thought what Vegas did to Winnipeg was terrifying. I know it took OT, but I said it earlier on the program. I was watching that game while waiting for the Canucks game to start. I kept an eye on it even after the Canucks game had started a little bit because the amount of quality chances that they generated, especially in the first 40 minutes of the game when Winnipeg was leading 1-0 and they were chasing it.
Yep.
I thought Hellebuck was spectacular, and I thought what Vegas put on tape was thoroughly terrifying against a Jets team that I rate pretty highly. Is Vegas the best team in the West? Do they got a shot?
Yeah, they have a shot, and as we've said many times, when we're ultimately judging them, they're going to probably add another really good player between now and then. I think, you know, if you look at their season-long numbers, especially at 5-on-5, a lot of the metrics have fallen off from where they were in the past, and I think that sort of raised some alarm bells for people. I'd say that they're clearly just an entirely different team when Mark Stone is available and on the top line compared to when he wasn't previously this year. And I feel like they're kind of slow playing this a little bit as well. I mean, that power play they have with the top unit is terrifying. Have arguably the best, if not one of the best, blue lines in the league. And yeah, as if they're getting this kind of goaltending from Aiden Hill and the 5-on-5 play upticks a little bit the way it did in that game against Winnipeg you're referencing, I think they have a chance. I think it's still Edmonton for my money, and, mm-hmm. and they haven't done anything recently to really dissuade me. They had an impressive performance in Minnesota last night as well, scoring 7 against them. So it's between those two teams probably for me. And yeah, maybe the Pacific Division is on the way up a little
all
bit.
All of a sudden,
we
looks a little tougher. Yeah. How about Ivan Barbashev for the Vegas Golden Knights, man? Like, I think what got into him?
He still leads the league in 5-on-5 scoring on the year, I think, which is remarkable. Obviously, he gets to play with Jack Eichel full-time, and that's a pretty sweet spot. But, I mean, his play along the walls and connecting a lot of this stuff and attacking off the rush with Eichel, like, I think Tom liked him more than I did in the past, but I can't say that. Having watched him in St. Louis, I can't say I thought that he had this type of offensive gear.
Neither did I, to be clear. I thought, though, I have a love for lanky, disruptive winger, and Barbashev had that.
Wasn't he playing center in St. Louis too, and they moved him to the wing, or like a little bit? Yeah,
occasionally. And I think he can play center if you need it in a pinch. But his length on the wall. This is one of the reasons why I always thought JT Miller would be better on the wall too. Like, I like long, disruptive forwards playing F1. Especially if they play defense like centers. Like, especially if they check back all the way to the net and stuff in the defensive zone. Which I always thought Barbashev had. I mean, he's been a huge, like, he's basically been like a nastier Riley Smith for them. And it's exactly in line with how they win.
Yeah. He's been a great fit. He's been an awesome fit for them, as you said. It's just like perfect with the identity of that team. Perfect fit next to Jack Eichel as well. You want to get into the Pacific Division just generally?
Yep.
I do. Because I'm fascinated, like, I guess. First of all, how do the Kings keep getting away with it?
Well, I think they have the number one rated defense if you look at, like, amount of time you give up in terms of possession time in the defensive zone, high danger chances, expected goals. So it's a lot of that, and I give them credit for being able to maintain that without Drew Doughty available to start the year. Like, I think that's, like, a legitimately impressive feat.
Well, which, by the way, like, in Vancouver, we spend so much time talking about Canucks injuries. Like, the Kings have done this without Drew Doughty for the entire season.
Yep. Yeah, they have. And credit to them. I think they've gotten big contributions, obviously, from young defensemen like Brandon Clark and Jordan Spence. I'm still skeptical that it's any different than it's been in the past. Like,
yeah,
I keep going over this in my head of, like, all right, regardless of how well they play here and how many games they win, and they had a long winning streak before finally losing in New Jersey last night, I still don't see that offensive gear where in a round one series, if they play a team like Edmonton again, it's just going to be the same thing for the fourth year in a row.
Can you imagine?
Anything offensively. Oh. Yeah.
But if they end up in the wild card spot and play Winnipeg or Minnesota, they just need to duck being the foil to McDavid.
They do.
Yeah.
It would be funny to see a forward.
I also just got to say, because Anze Kopitar is having this, I mean, he's good every year, right? But he's like over a point per game.
Offensively,
right now.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just looking at his hockey DB. Just based on the counting stats, he's basically been the same player every year since he's entered the league.
I know.
He entered the league with 61 points in 72 games. Last year, he had 70 points in 81 games. This year, he's going to be like at like 82 points in 82 games.
Yep.
It's insane. He's just came in, and he's like, he's been that for 20 years. I've never seen anything like it, where he's just like the same guy for 20 years in the NHL. It's absolutely unreal for Anze Kopitar.
I don't know how he does it, because he was obviously never a burner even early in his career, but like, he could move, especially for a big guy. You watch him now, like, everything is done at such a snail's pace. Like, he's like, just letting the game come to him, kind of like Joe Thornton did towards the end of his career.
Except
he just gets away with it.
He's not upright in the neutral zone the way Joe Thornton
no,
was.
No, he's not. But like you watch him just maneuver and everything is like so methodical.
Yeah.
And he just like, he lets it, everyone has, just has to work around his own pace and he molds the game to his liking. And so, yeah, I mean, it's awesome that he's still doing this at this point in his career. Cause there was a stretch, as Jamie's saying, like he's been so consistent. I remember when they signed him to this previous extension before
totally,
this contract
yeah.
he's on, I was like, oof. I don't know how that's going to age because there's already some warning signs. And that was, what, like 8 years ago?
Yeah.
At this point,
yeah. He's like, uh-oh, he's really slowing down.
Yeah, this
is
like
no,
three contracts ago that I was worried about how that contract would age. So
it's unreal.
He's like, uh-oh, I'm the same player, just a little slower.
Yes.
I mentioned in the second segment, because okay, well, actually, let me put this to you. What do you think of the sleeping giant theory? The theory that the Canucks are a sleeping giant in the Western Conference and that once they get all these bodies back, Demko gets ramped up, Miller's now back, Hronek back in six more weeks, they'll have a shot to make the sort of run down the stretch that can maybe, you know, hoist them to the top of the Pacific. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm certainly willing to buy that at full health they're going to look more imposing than they have of late. I don't know if I'd go so far as sleeping giant. Like, I just think that the idea of that, maybe this is semantics, but that kind of invokes like a legitimate fear. And I think even when the Canucks are playing really well, it's not necessarily going to like blow you away in that capacity. It makes sense, a lot of sense, that they wouldn't want to make any sort of a drastic move at this point, personnel wise, trading, until they actually get an extended stretch of games with their full team intact. Like, I totally subscribe to that. I'm just not sure what the kind of full ceiling of that looks like.
Yeah. Feels like they're another star defender away.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
In my mind.
Yeah, which none of which are available, basically.
The other thing I mentioned, you're not wrong. The other thing I mentioned in the second segment was while being impressed with what the Canucks did to the Florida Panthers last night, mightily impressed, my strongest concern at this point now through almost 30 games of the season is, what if the Canucks are just the third best team in their own division? What's your thought on that theory?
Yeah, I mean, we both like Edmonton as probably the best team in the West. We just talked about how Vegas has a gear they can certainly hit. I think that's totally fine, though. You kind of just have to play out the rest of the season and let the chips kind of fall down. Like, I wouldn't panic about that because I think Vegas has a lot of injury concerns,
yep.
right? Edmonton has flaws of their own as well.
Absolutely.
And the Canucks played them to a 7-game series last year. So it's not ideal, but also I think the league is more open, really, it feels like, than it's been in however
years,
long
yeah.
I can remember. Like, I don't think there's any team in either conference that you're like, oh, man, we can't draw this team because there's no way we can beat them. I think pretty much every team in the league right now has flaws. So
yeah.
I think for any contending team, and the Canucks are one of those, I feel like that's kind of encouraging that with a few right breaks and everyone being healthy at the right time and playing your game, like there is a path towards winning.
It's wildly telling that there's only three teams above a 700 point percentage
yeah.
and none above 750.
Yeah.
I mean, we usually get that one 800 point percentage team and it's like they have JT Compher as their third line center and it's just like ridiculous.
And on the flip side, there's only two below a 400 points percentage in the NHL. Only
yeah.
two teams below a 400
no
point
one,
percentage.
No one's,
who is that? The Predators and the Blackhawks?
Preds and the Blackhawks. Yeah.
No one's tanking for James Hoggins, huh?
No.
We'll see that return with Gavin McKenna next class. All right,
oh, man.
Jamie
McKenna.
Has an idea
okay,
for a draft.
I've got two ideas. One was mine. So mine was Christmas movies.
Okay.
Somebody texted in Luke, and I like this one, so I'll give you guys the choice. Draft uncreative stock Christmas presents that you give to extended family or coworkers.
Ooh.
Which I kind of like.
Let's save that one. Let's do Christmas movies.
Save it for next Christmas?
Are you on next Friday?
I'm not here
Friday?
Next week, so this is my last draft of the year.
I think you should do Christmas movies.
Yeah, Christmas movies.
All right, Christmas movies. Okay. Who goes first?
It's your draft. You decide.
All right. I'll go first.
Okay.
Home Alone.
Wow.
We talked about it. The GOAT. So good. Just watched it. Fresh in my mind. I love it.
It is a very good one.
All right.
Do you want to go
I'll
Snake?
Go second.
Okay.
Give me Elf.
Yeah.
It's a good choice. Modern classic.
That's a goated film. Okay. So I have to make two selections here. I'm going to pick Die Hard first.
You're just baiting us to get outraged on a technicality.
Die Hard is clearly a Christmas
movie. I'm not going to rise to it. I'm not going to do it. We got 4 minutes left, Transfer. I'm not going to waste it arguing with you about Die Hard.
It's clearly Die Hard. So Die Hard, and I will take, man, I'm going to take I think I'm going to take Love Actually.
Oh, that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a good pick. It's a bad movie, but it's a good pick.
Yeah, thank you.
I watch it every Christmas, so I can say
that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a great way of putting it, because I agree 100%. Yeah. Like, it's got to get picked, but it's also a bad movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, but Bill Nye singing is always the best.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so we did. Give me The Grinch.
The Grinch? Which one? Benedict Cumberbatch Grinch?
No.
Jim Carrey Grinch?
There was a Benedict Cumberbatch Grinch?
I think.
Was that the most? Was that the like the most recent? Oh, I didn't know that was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
I think of it as the Pharrell Grinch.
Oh.
Because he's narrating it.
Whoa. I didn't even know that was Pharrell.
Give me the Jim Carrey one.
Jim Carrey the Grinch.
I didn't even know it was Benedict Cumberbatch.
That's a wild pick. The Jim Carrey Grinch?
I agree.
Is that a bad one?
Yes. That's a truly wild pick. Oh. That's the one where he has like a love interest and stuff. It's so weird.
Well, you know what? I'll stick with it. It's fine.
You know what? Whatever. Who cares? Stick with it. All right. I'm excited about this one. This was like my guy, my sleeper that I was hoping would get to me. A Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah, no, that's a great pick. I considered it strongly.
So good. Such a great version.
Michael Caine is so overqualified to be doing Ebenezer with Muppets
with
around.
Muppets.
And also the songs are good.
The songs are awesome.
And the Ghost of Future Past is like, or Ghost of
Ghost,
Christmas Future
Ghost of Christmas.
Is like genuinely scary.
X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Honestly, the Christmas Ghost of Future Past, that's like an X-Men Muppets crossover. Like, sign me up for that.
That would be pretty good. And then I don't love any of my options here. So I'm going to go old school and go A Christmas Story.
Yeah, it's good. But
like, it's got that nostalgia charm.
It does, yeah.
I'm not going to like vouch for it as a work of cinema, but as something to put on and be like, I remember when I used to like this.
Fair.
Jim Carrey Grinch, so you don't need to worry about acts of cinema.
All right. Damon, you got one more. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go with Bad Santa.
That's a good one.
That's decent, yeah. Solid pick. I'm going to go with a classic, The Holiday.
Well done.
I don't even know that one.
Wow.
What's The Holiday?
Brother, watch The Holiday.
I don't think you've ever called me brother before.
Brother.
Hulk Hogan over here.
Cameron Diaz gets broken up by Ed Burns, who admits that he is cheating on her.
Oh,
at
is that
the
what
same
she switches,
time.
Switches houses?
Yeah, at the same time that Kate Winslet,
right,
who is being led on by the dastardly Rufus Sewell and works at a newspaper, gets engaged without telling her. So in need of a life switch, they switch houses, at which point Cameron Diaz has a sexy tryst with Kate Winslet's brother, played by Jude Law, and Kate Winslet starts a relationship with a Hollywood film score composer, played by Jack Black. It is wildly good. You know what? It's the sort of movie they just don't make anymore. It's Hollywood magic. I watch it every Christmas, often multiple times.
Wow.
Not just, I knew
there's
you guys
no
would
way that's
it.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Watch it in one season multiple times.
I watch it so frequently that this year, on December 1st, when I suggested to my wife that we should watch The Holiday, she said, why don't we buy it this time because we rent it twice a year?
This is like the most impassioned I've heard you in
I've
a
never
long
heard
time.
You talk about
so
this movie.
There is a character in it who's like an old Hollywood, like a very old Hollywood man that Kate Winslet makes friends with. And he has this scene in a diner explaining like a meet cute. Honestly, one of the best scenes in cinema the last 20 years.
Oh my goodness. This is incredible. We're learning new things about trans here. That was an impassioned speech. Okay, people are choked. We didn't take a National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. So, I mean, what are you going to do?
Trance, that sounds like holiday hot garbage.
All right, we gotta go. I do just want to say one more time, it's Food Bank Friday. We've got just over 4 hours to go before the 6 p.m. cutoff.
Text "The Food Bank Needs Our Support This Time of Year Especially." 30333 is the number. You text a carrot emoji. You can donate $5, $10, or $25. I want to give a shout out to Aaron York, donated $500. We just got an anonymous donation of $665. We've had a few $100 donations. Thanks to the Van Dental Clinic for a $225 donation. So lots of people are opening their wallets. We really appreciate it. Goes a long way. If you have the ability to help out, man, it means a lot. 30333. Text the carrot emoji. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We're back on Monday here on Sportsnet 650.